All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Friday, December 22nd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. As always, for those listening for a long time or first time listeners, DFSR.com/NBA will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good. So many good friends over at lineuplab.com.
I got tons of good friends over at lineuplab.
I have one specifically, and I'm going to count James Anglin as my.
We throw a whole holiday party for all of our good friends at lineuplab. Moving on.
We only need to. Let's go. A holiday party would be like a five topper at like Chili's. What was I saying? DFSR.com/NBA, free 3-day trial, blah, 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 $34.95 a month after that, and you're all good to go. All right. We're going to talk game by game breakdown. For week 16, we have the two Saturday games. Really going to kind of probably gloss over those. It is an interesting slate, though, because I'm just going to just do a 1 second recap on that slate. But sure. You do have Davante Adams out, which is probably going to open up some of the passing game. You would think for Green Bay, for Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson, possibly Geronimo Allison as well. I'm not really high. It's hard to get excited at all at this point about Jordy, just because he just hasn't looked very good for weeks and weeks and weeks. But between Cobb and Allison, I think you do get some cheaper value there. And then you get three good running back. Actually, real quick, for those people that are playing Saturday, for that slate, you have Alex Collins, Jamal Williams, and Latavius Murray. I would say those are the three like RB1 style guys that are going. If you had to start two of the three on FanDuel, they're all very close in price. They're right around the same projection for us. Do you have a gut of saying picking two out of those three, which direction you would go?
Oh, I guess I'd go with it's really close. Probably Murray, I think. I think you just go Murray and Collins. That could be the safest combination. Like, it's going to be hard for Green Bay being 9-point dogs against a great defense in Minnesota. Williams is the kind of guy who's like been okay some weeks, but largely been just really, really mediocre when he actually gets the ball in his hands. So you like the volume, but I don't see. I mean, Latavius Murray also just has huge touchdown potential too. So I'd probably just go there. I think those two guys represent a lot more safety than the other two.
Yep, I agree. And then I think you can kind of sprinkle in. I don't mind Hundley. I don't mind Keenum there. So it's an interesting Saturday slate. Something these two game slates, especially when you get some pretty bad teams on it, can be just pretty uninspiring, sort of like what we saw last week with Chicago and Detroit. I don't get the sense here. I think there are a couple different ways you can go on that Saturday slate. But I think we're going to spend most of our time talking about the Sunday set of games for the main slate starting at 1:00. There are some interesting matchups, some big lines, which we're going to probably need to wade through some of, what teams' motivations are at this point. We have some teams that obviously have completely checked out. We have other ones fighting for the playoffs. Some are closer than others. So right around this time in these last 2 weeks, it does pay to take into consideration teams. I guess I would just call it motivations in terms of where they stand and how much they want to risk injury going forward into the playoffs. Not too many destinies are sealed at this point, but some teams are getting close. Probably the most interesting game from a fantasy perspective, just in terms of overall points. The first one is Atlanta goes in to take on the Saints. Saints are -5.5 favorites. This game has by far the highest total of really the entire week. It's set right now at 53. Saints are going to get Marshawn Lattimore back, and he's going to play this week. Let's start on the Atlanta side, though. Julio Jones. So we were just briefly talking before we started the podcast, and we were saying, man, our projection on Julio Jones is really low. I mean, he was projected at the time right in like the Robbie Anderson basically range of guys. I was trying to think. I can't remember who else was in.
Yeah, he's still there. Around like 12.5 fantasy points for this upcoming week. Yep.
And we looked at it, and you had some thoughts. I mean, like, what are our thoughts on Julio Jones? Because when you look at it, and it strikes me as looking incorrect. And then you made some good points about just kind of where we probably want to be. Maybe out on a limb with Julio Jones.
Yeah, so here's the thing with Julio this season. I mean, you can go deep on all the different stats, but just on a basic fantasy points per game sniff test level, he's averaged 12.8 FanDuel fantasy points per game this season, and that's with a 45 fantasy point game against Tampa Bay, right? So I think if we could say reasonable upside on Jones in the best possible case, normally would be like even 30 fantasy points. And so, it's been really, really up and down. He followed that game up by shaving off 93% of his receiving yards and going down to 24 receiving yards against Minnesota. He's kind of like Amari Cooper to me. He's like the kind of guy who can go off in any given game with just the right matchup. And otherwise, he's just kind of regular trending towards not that great anymore. So, this cue him for a huge week this week. I get it. This game has a pretty high total. And Julio's like, oh, it's a threat to go off, obviously. But it's... crazy to me to think about investing $8,500 in a guy with such a spotty track record this season.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, he has something like eight games of 10 or less points. He's crushed you almost basically every single week in his prices, because his price has stayed in this 8,000 range pretty much all season. You know, part of that's a public view of him, I think. I think there are certain players that are priced. I think some players are completely priced just on the algorithm of whatever FanDuel and DraftKings says. And I think there's a couple other ones that maybe just get a little bit of name recognition, or actually probably what more, I take that back, probably what more of it is just ownership levels. And his ownership levels are always just a little bit higher than they should be. And as long as your ownership levels are higher than they should be, you can still kind of stink and your price is going to maintain, because people still want to play Julio Jones. So I take it back about just like the individual moving around with pieces of guys. I think that's more what it is. He's a public guy. People are waiting for him to be good. They're sitting and waiting for the huge game from him, and you can get it. And this season, way more often, pretty much one time is all that happened, and then all the rest of the times you've been completely burned. The other piece of information here, probably for Atlanta, that's relevant, it looks like Tevin Coleman has cleared concussion protocol and will be back and playing. We were waiting on that news. It's pretty important news, because it doesn't crystallize anything for the Atlanta run game, except that we probably don't want to play either of these guys now, right? Like, this Coleman coming back and clearing concussion protocol, we were both very high on Devontae Freeman with him out. Does that complete buzz? Does it just buzz Freeman off of any consideration for cash games now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Freeman still has upside, because, you know, with this concussion situation, they're going to be more cautious with Coleman. Like, if he does take any hard hits or anything, it wouldn't shock me to see him exit. Freeman's been very effective in Coleman's absence. Atlanta right now is still fighting for a playoff spot. I mean, the division might be tough. Well, if they win this game, it'll be less tough. But, you know, still 3-8-6 teams nipping at their heels for that second wild card slot. So they're going to do everything in their power to win. So that leads me to believe that that's going to be their running back by committee that they've had success with. But yeah, I think Freeman's still a reasonable big upside target for tournaments.
Yeah, these teams are only played each other 3 weeks ago, so that we have a pretty recent comp. Yeah. And Atlanta was able to win. They were able to grind out a lot of the game. They carried the ball 37 times and completely controlled time possession. Michael Thomas did have a good game in that one as they played catch up. I mean, obviously that was an Atlanta home game. Vegas does not see it playing out. And Julio is decent, 5 for 98. He did have 11 targets, which I guess is relevant. Other thoughts here on the run game, possibly for New Orleans, the Mark Ingram Kamara group. I mean, anything from Michael Thomas, anything else to like? And it's weird, because right now when we look at cash games, it doesn't look like we have really much exposure to this game. And it always makes me feel a little weird when it's you would make a good bet that it's going to be the highest scoring game of the week.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Michael Thomas was really good against Atlanta their last meetup, and some of that was playing from behind. And, you know, if the Saints get up, it's probably not the plan to get him 14 targets. But the fact that he was able to get 14 targets, convert it into 10 receptions for 117 and a touch is obviously a welcome sign. If you have to pick between wide receiver ones in this game, I'll take Thomas over Julio Jones. Perhaps not even a controversial opinion at this point, but he is cheaper. So I think if you want to lean in that direction, that makes total sense to me. I think Thomas actually even a reasonable cash game option. It's just that there are a lot of other good plays at other positions this week, and a lot of mid-range to low tier value at wide receiver. So I would suspect that he doesn't make the cut, but I wouldn't be surprised to see reasonable ownership on him. And I don't think it's necessarily wrong.
Yeah, we have him as the second highest on the main slate, second highest projected wide receiver behind Keenan Allen. So a lot to like about this game. Sometimes both these teams, I think, are pretty fairly priced at this point. And when they're both employing running back by committees and just kind of spreading the ball around, it is hard to hone in on teams whose opportunity has been basically the same this entire season. They haven't, on the offensive end, outside of one or two games with Coleman and Freeman, have not dealt with too much injury issues. And that does just kind of consolidate the pricing around the guys that are good, and it makes it hard to play them. All right, moving into the Miami and KC game. KC, huge favorites, minus 10 at home. We talked about Kareem Hunt yesterday, and you know, kind of, and then the recap pod about where we stand with Hunt. If you take strictly his season, we don't really do this, but because we just try to regress some of this based on like opponent and just what you've done, maybe just it still pays. I think it's sometimes with football players to use some of your baseline expectations for especially running backs. But if you were to use just his season long yards per carry and season long touchdowns, we actually have Kareem Hunt. We would have Kareem Hunt projected for more than Ezekiel Elliott this week. Now, again, that we don't want to completely factor it in because NFL is wonky and the sample size is pretty small. But I mean, do you think, I feel like you maybe didn't even mention this a little bit yesterday, that do you think Kareem Hunt is creeping back up into that class? We thought he was there for a while, then didn't think he was there for a while. Is he creeping back up into that completely elite style of running back that we're looking for.
No, I don't think so. I think he's just another guy who has the upside to get a lot of opportunity in any given game. But we also know that the downside is that he gets single digit carries like he has three times in the last 10 weeks. So I think he's still good option, you know, 8,300 against a middling to poor Miami run defense in a game where the Chiefs are favored. Like, that doesn't sound bad to me. And I think he's playable and I think he'll see ownership. Will he be one of the top two guys in our running back system? Like, I think it's crazy to take him over Ezekiel Elliott, for instance. I think his upside is basically Ezekiel Elliott's median performance. That's my perspective. And I don't mean total fantasy points. I know that, you know, he can punch in a bunch of touchdowns and, you know, he's the goal line back and so on and so forth. So not to say that his upside is Elliott's floor or anything insane like that. It's just that I think in any given week, Elliott's a much bigger favorite to hit value in a cash game than Kareem Hunt is.
Let me just clarify what I was saying. We have Ezekiel Elliott projected for more points than Hunt. And if you strip away some other assumptions that we've made, then the Hunt thing comes a little bit closer. I agree with you. I don't want to take him over Hunt. And then you do look at last week where he just touches the ball 24 times in the run game and also has 9 targets in the passing game. And man, that is very few running backs get there. And I know that there was weeks where he didn't, but there's almost no running backs in the league have reached that kind of one game usage. And that is pretty meaningful. Anything else to like about a KC team that is big favorites here? Travis Kelce is a guy we've been on in the past. Tyreek Hill has upside in a kind of one-off sort of way. And then there's Alex Smith, who seems like at times he has a high fantasy floor. They are up for a lot of points. We did not include him in the cash game podcast, but do you think there's some tournament upside on these KC guys?
Yeah, I actually thought about Smith for the cash game article this week. He was probably the fourth guy on the outside looking in. I didn't write him up just because I had already written up a bunch of quarterbacks in this similar price range that I like better. But I think Smith is playable. I mean, 7,800 is, you know, cheaper than some of the other big name options. He's 500 less than Cam. I kind of see him as a little basically similar to Cam, but way less upside. And I think the floor is actually lower too on account of so fewer rushes. So I'm just not super into Alex Smith this week. I don't think the upside is necessarily there for big tournaments. I think he's like a high floor, slightly worse version of Westbrook and Newton. So Westbrook, Wilson.
There you go. That's what happened.
Damn big name Russells. They always fuck us up. So don't, you got to bleep that out.
We might have to. I'll go back and possibly bleep that. I'll keep going.
Explicit rating. That's the first time I've ever done it. I don't normally curse everybody. I'm a really upstanding gentleman. As far as the other skill positions on Kansas City, I think that they're kind of like, you know, we're just kind of priced out of them at this point. They've been doing similar things all season long. Hill is kind of on the lower end of his target share over the course of the season. And he kind of fluctuates in this way too. Like, you know, sometimes he'll just fluctuate down into 6 targets. It also is meaningfully directly correlated with Kareem Hunt's usage. When things are going well for Hunt, everyone else gets less to eat. So I think there's enough volatility in this offense right now that you probably don't want to pay the prices that Kelce and Hill developed for themselves when Hunt was doing nothing at all. And maybe you don't want to play Hunt either because you're afraid he's going to go back in the other direction. But that means there's a lot of big tournament upside here.
And then on the Miami side, we briefly talked about Jay Cutler just as maybe a cheap DraftKings play yesterday. But let's talk about Kenyon Drake here because they are 10-point underdogs, which is really not where you usually want to start with running back at all, because just for obvious reasons of game flow and game script. And there's just that running back is usually the first to go. If you are down, especially in double digits, is usually a no-go territory for us. And that yet we still have that factored into our system. And Kenyon Drake's been so good. And he got a ton of use last week, even in a game where they were coming from behind. 16 carries, had a bunch of targets in the passing game. Right now, when we run lineups, he's actually coming, not into all lineups, but on FanDuel, he's coming into a decent amount of top lineups, like to the point where it's going to be a thing where we're going to probably need to make a decision. Would you feel comfortable with Kenyon Drake as a huge underdog as a running back in this kind of situation? It makes me feel uncomfortable, and the numbers are saying that it might be a play.
Yeah, I think it might just be a play. I mean, we've seen his usage in some bad matchups in the past month. And by like since December started, basically, he hasn't touched the ball fewer than 22 times in a game. He had 26 touches against Denver, was excellent in a terrible matchup. He had 30 touches against New England, was excellent in a terrible matchup. And then he goes into Buffalo and gets 16 carries and catches 6 balls and also scores 20 fantasy points again. So if you look at just strictly consistency based on current opportunity, I think Kenyon Drake is among the best in the league. I mean, just 22 fantasy points in the last 3 weeks at Buffalo, then New England and Denver. So it's tough to get a worse slate than that and still perform pretty well. Still very cheap. I think he's absolutely utterly playable at Kansas City here. I think he's going to be involved on either end too, just because when they're down, With Cutler being so erratic, I think they're going to lean on the short pass as well. They have some other skill position concerns this week with Devontae Parker missing practice and so forth. So, yeah, I think Kenyon Drake is okay. I think we might be the only ones who play him if we throw him out there. But this week, I'm dedicated to not letting that stop myself.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think this will be the conversation we have. And then on DraftKings, when we look at running optimal lineups right now too, we actually get a Kenyon Drake and Jarvis Landry pairing over there, which strikes me as having a nice floor. Now, Devontae Parker I think he returned to practice yesterday, but he's a little bit banged up. Landry still, coming off a week where he saw 13 targets. He went back. He had been double digit kind of on lock and then went through a 3-week stretch for New England, Denver, and then New England again, where he really didn't see. He saw eight, six, and nine targets. Would we be comfortable going back to him, at least on DraftKings, for that full PPR down to 6,300 there, which strikes me as a nice price.
I think so. I mean, the guy just piles up receptions like no one else in the league right now, that now that Antonio Brown is out. And sure, he doesn't do a lot when he does catch the ball, or at least he hasn't this season. But I think that actually plays in a little bit of upside for him. We know he's a big time red zone target. We know that he's the guy they turn to on third and six and so forth. So I think Landry is a very, very good option. I think he's great when they're down. I think he's good when they're up. And I think he's just got a floor that's high enough to basically play him in any format.
Yeah, and here's the thing. They're big underdogs. KC is like not a great defense. So keep this in mind. They're ranked 22nd in DVOA right now, 31st against the rush. They're very bad against the run. I mean, this is factoring in something with the Drake thing too, right? Like, I get that they're big dogs here, but and I know we spent a lot of time on Miami, but it really warrants consideration. And I think this is where it's going to be a testament of where the numbers, like where the rubber hits the road with the numbers. Because KC's not a good defense. Miami's not all that good of an offense, but they've looked much better with Drake. And I think that's going to be the thing that probably consumes a lot of our discussion on Sunday. All right, let's keep moving through some of these games. The next game we have going here on the list is Denver and Washington. Washington minus 3.5 favorites. Yeah, we're gonna go through this game pretty quickly. so Denver right now can't decide between Paxton Lynch and Brock Osweiler. That's what happens. this is like what happens of like when my daughter and I are like playing toys, like her toys, and she's like, "Which doll do you want to use?" I'm like, "Oh, I really don't care at all. I just don't think it matters. Like, the course of this game, like which doll that I pick. So why don't you just pick for me? Because I can't see the game going any differently if I have like little baby Jesse or little baby like Sarah for the rest of the thing. This strikes me as the same situation here.
This is a well spent 20 seconds. Hey, I hear the analogy works perfectly for me as a fellow father for all of our 20 something audience. We just lost them all. Yeah, I mean, Denver. It wasn't very good. I don't know why a change up in quarterback is going to matter at all. And they're good enough on defense, and Washington, the situation there is uncertain enough that it's going to be tricky to take anyone there as well. I did write up CJ Anderson as a potential pivot for cash game purposes. I do think, or actually for cash games and GPPs, last 2 weeks, he had 22 carries against the Jets, 30 carries against Indianapolis. If they're going to be kind of weird in the passing game, I could see them just handing the ball to him in the hopes to end the game as quickly as possible. And then keep an eye on Washington as well. We have Samaj Perine left practice on Thursday with a groin injury. So his status is sort of uncertain. If he got hurt, and I mean, goodness me, this would be a lot of running backs that we'd have to list off that got hurt for Washington. It would be a timeshare, Doug, between Capri Bibbs and LaShawn Daniels
Jr. Bing.
Get ready, baby. Yeah. that might be that time of year. So we'll have to keep an eye on it. But yeah, by and large, this game is a heavy dog to have any players in it be in any of my lineups.
I do really like CJ Anderson. He's six or seven games of 15 or more carries this year, and they do throw to him at times. The Anderson thing, we've been wrong on him a couple times, but it hasn't been for lack of opportunity. It's just like, it's one of those things you just need to pick the right week on him, because he's had plenty of weeks where he's been pretty good. And otherwise this game is eminently forgettable. All right. Another big game kind of that I think has a decent amount of fantasy implications here. Tampa Bay goes in and plays Carolina. Carolina is minus 10 favorites. So like I said, we have a bunch of double digit favorites or more going into this week. We talked at length about Cam Newton. Think that he will probably be a popular play again in cash on both sites, I would say, just after last week's ownership and then the performance that he had. But some other news and notes here. Greg Olsen, we talked about as well yesterday. It looks like Devin Funchess is going to play. We did not talk about him at all. Still strikes me as a guy that could see targets. You're always going to have conversion problems when Cam is your quarterback. Do you think it hurts hurts Funchess to have Olsen back in the fold here.
Probably, and you can't play Funchess for anything outside of big tournaments anyway, so it's probably not worth going too deep. He's playable in that format, but last 3 weeks, 7-7 and 4 targets with Olsen back on the rise. Like, why would we pay 7,000 for this guy given some of the other 7,000 and less options, like him versus Landry or something? Like, that would be a crazy play, so tournament only.
And then I think we're waiting on news about the Tampa Bay running back situation. Not sure it's going to totally matter. Doug Martin had to sit out last week for violation of team rules, though they said it was handled. That situation's a complete mess. There was an injury news or piece of news here from Tampa Bay, or two for the passing game that might be relevant. One is OJ Howard is out for the season. Not huge, but it probably at times Cameron Brate's snap count could fluctuate, although he is actually questionable as well. So we have to wait on him. And then DeSean Jackson is questionable to play, and I think he might even be trending toward doubtful. Let's take a look. Let's assume that Tampa Bay is playing from behind in this game, which in Vegas at least suggests that they're going to be. Would we want to go back to a guy like Mike Evans for just, you know, Jameis kind of just throwing the jump ball up there? I mean, Adam Humphries is a guy that's seen some targets, especially in some possession kind of style things. And if Brate were a full go, could we talk ourselves into these Bucs wide receivers if they're playing from behind and they're a little bit banged up?
Yeah, so it is interesting. I mean, if Jackson does miss the game, he does actually take some of the direct targets away from Evans because they're very similar wide receivers. It's a very odd signing. Like, who needs two guys that run as fast as they can down the field and hope to catch the long ball? Like, I just felt that was strange. It hasn't really worked out, but I think that would free Evans up, and you could potentially see a big game there. I do think Humphries is pretty interesting, frankly. I mean, last week, 5 targets, 5 catches. In the last 3 weeks, he's converted every one of his targets into a reception. He's 4,500 on FanDuel this week. And he also scored a touchdown against Atlanta as well. I think if there were a lot of these injury concerns, like particularly Brate, like if Brate winds up missing, they're going to stick someone else into the tight end. And I could see Humphries gobbling up a lot of those possession sort of targets. I think he's actually playable really in cash if the injury situation shakes out just right.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Now, he's not a comp because he's not going to run DeSean Jackson's routes, which is always something you need to factor.
No.
And that can be confusing to people because at times when you get a wide receiver that goes down, you want to just slot in the wide receiver 3 on the team into that wide receiver 2, but that's not usually how it works. Like, Humphries will continue to run the same routes, and they'll just run, I don't even know, I gotta be honest, I'm not even sure who their backups here are. But that's something to keep an eye on, but I wouldn't just automatically give over all of Jackson's target share to Humphries. But that being said, I think that he sees a lot of high quality targets, and his price is going to, it would be pushing up close to a possible even cash gameplay if we thought that he was going to see maybe like a 20% target increase or something like that. Moving into the next game, we have Cleveland going in and playing Chicago. This is another one that's tough to get all that excited about. Now, we did talk about Kendall Wright yesterday as a possible cash game play possession receiver. He's coming very cheap on both sides. Is there anything out? I mean, Jordan Howard's a guy we've talked about in the past, although Cleveland, each week that goes by where it's their Cleveland seems like that run defense is kind of legit. I know I was the one. I'll take the L on this one because I have been the one that's been saying, you know, smoke and mirrors, and Cleveland's run defense isn't that good, and they're just simply not going to sustain it. And yet we have just another week.
Yeah, we said the same thing. I mean, I think we probably are in agreement there. I think it's interesting on Jordan Howard, though, because the Bears have been very game script conscious with his deployment this season, and they're hardly ever beating anybody, right? So given that they're actually favorites this week, that's got to be kind of a weird feeling, like a who me sort of feeling for them. I do think that he becomes more interesting than he would be in an average week. I still think you're not going to pay 7,000 for him. Like, I'd just as soon pay the exact same price for Kenyon Drake, whose opportunity has been a lot steadier, even in a game where they're not favored against Kansas City. Also, I think at this point in the season, it's reasonable to be concerned about the matchup, and also for cash game purposes, the kind of cultural consciousness around Cleveland's run defense is that they're not a defense you want to really target. So I think all of that taken together means you're going to be taking a pretty significant risk by playing Howard in cash. And I just don't think that makes sense.
Yeah, this game has a really low total, 38 total going in. Chicago.
Has there been a worse quarterback matchup since we've started this business?
It's pretty bad, man. DeSean Kizer is really, really awful. And Mitch Trubisky is really.
But Mitch Trubisky. Sometimes he throws 7 passes.
I take Trubisky over to Kizer.
I would too. He's been good. the last couple of weeks.
And that's where Kizer just needs to take a long look in the mirror. But I mean, on the Cleveland side, assuming they're maybe playing catch up here, Duke Johnson's had some upside in games. He's scampered in for some touchdowns. I mean, they still have Josh Gordon there that they probably want to try to get the ball to. Anything either. I'm finding hard to even make a huge
Duke Johnson with a mention on the podcast this week. I think that's a signal that it's time for the next team here.
Yeah, I think you can maybe just try to take a flyer on some of these guys without getting overly excited. All right, before we get to some more of these games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor runs an NFL free roll every week on Sunday where you can go and get a part of the action for free. So go on over there, check them out. They're a salary cap game like you're used to, except for you don't have to go up against the big sharks, putting in hundreds of lineups. FantasyFactor.com, check out their NFL free rolls on Sunday. And they might even be running an NBA free roll tonight on Friday. So yeah, check them out. They're good people.
Detroit goes in and plays Cincinnati. Detroit actually a -4 road favorite against a Cincinnati team that just really couldn't have looked worse last week. Remember against the Vikings. So they just look completely awful, completely out of sorts, couldn't get anything going.
The Vikings have made a lot of people look bad on offense too this year. I mean, like the Vikings are really, really elite defense. So
sense. But it's still just the Bengals. So you know, Vegas doesn't see this as being a complete waste of time in terms of just overall points scored. On the Cincinnati side, it looks like Joe Mixon has cleared concussion protocol and he will come back. Hard to probably target him this week. AJ Green's a guy that we actually ran out there in DraftKings cash, much to the chagrin of the overall end result of the lineup. But what do you think about a guy like him? He's seen double-digit targets plenty of times this season. He still has Andy Dalton throwing to him. Detroit's a decent defense. Anything to like here about on the Green side or Bengals side in general?
Not really. I mean, I would be cautious about throwing Green out there against Darius Slay. Slay won NFC Player of the Week last week, just, you know, shutting down the passing game once again. I don't think Green really has a whole lot to play for. He's looked, you know, in and out of sort of consciousness when he's been on the field this season, you know, sometimes just disappearing completely. So, no, I don't think you're going to play any of these Cincinnati guys. Mixon coming back is kind of whatever. I mean, he's 6,100. We've played him at similar prices in the past. But given that Giovanni Bernard's looked pretty decent in his stead, I don't think that you're going to really want to go there either. So I could see a timeshare there. I think Cincinnati's just a skipper.
And then Detroit side of the ball, they did a little bit of a running back by committee last week with Tyon Green, Theo Riddick, and then Amir Abdullah. He was back and playing, though he was outsnapped by those other two guys. And I got to say, God bless get people the confidence in some of these guys, because Amir Abdullah was upset with his opportunity when he came back. He was averaging
coach?
That's what I mean, 3.4 yards per carry. And they gave him a lot of carries. They gave him 151 really bad carries leading into this
game. Didn't you see the Minnesota game where I went 6 carries for 14 yards? How about the Chicago game before that when I went 11 carries for 22 yards? What the hell? I just get injured and that's what this team is like. What about the 11 carries for 20 yards against Pittsburgh? Yeah, this guy's a total joke.
And then on the passing side, I mean, Detroit are guys that we've wanted to target in the past. Golden Tate, Marvin Jones specifically have seen big target share. Really wasn't there last week at all. Actually, Eric Ebron led the team in targets with 7. Do you think we could be possibly buying low on a couple of these guys just because it doesn't, or just be buying on some separation? Because I don't get the sense that they're going to be widely played, and yet we have seen double-digit target games from both Tate and Jones this season.
Yeah, we just need to know why I'm doing it. You know, like, am I doing it just specifically for separation? Because I think these teams have shown, or this team in particular has shown, enough lack of a game plan that I don't really want to guess who's going to be their wide receiver one or chief ball catcher in any given week. So I'm certainly not going to play any of these guys for cash. Again, both of these guys are more expensive than Landry, Sterling Shepard, you know, like actual guys that get targets on their team. So I'm just simply not going to consider them for cash. And for big tournaments, yeah, who cares? I mean, anyone's in play, I guess. But I just, again, not guys that are going to show up in any of my lineups.
Rams go in and play Tennessee. Rams coming obviously off that huge win against Seattle last week where they just completely boat raced the Seahawks. Yeah. In Seattle looked dominant, looked like a team that could go to the Super Bowl, especially now with Carson Wentz injured for the Eagles. They go in as -6.5 road favorites against Tennessee. Todd Gurley was amazing last week. The price has come up. He's had completely elite games. We do not have him ranked. I mean, from a overall projection standpoint right now, just from raw points, we actually have him below Ezekiel Elliott and Kareem Hunt. Does that strike you as correct with a guy like Gurley? Does it make you worried? I'm not so worried about the Elliott thing. The Hunt thing strikes me possibly as a little bit weird. What are your thoughts on Gurley? We do like to target running backs when they're favorites. Being on the road probably matters a little bit, but what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so I'll break down the process on Gurley because I was the one who kind of set his opportunity this week. We have Gurley at the highest overall usage in a game that he would have, minus like four games this season. So we have him at 25 total touches. He has exceeded that four or five times this year. So just looking at game script considerations, their status in the, you know, standings and what they have to play for and so forth, I just kind of don't think it's going to be a game where he goes out there and gets 30 touches. If you do, then you can certainly consider the $9,400 price tag. At this point, it's going to be really hard for them to give the division back to Seattle. I think if they get up, and they should, this should be not a very difficult game for them. I could see Gurley kind of taking more of a breather, especially after last week's big week. So I think 25 touches is still kind of a lot. But, you know, maybe it winds up being higher than that and he winds up being a great play. I think the real question is, if you're having this hard conversation with yourself, like him or Ezekiel Elliott, who's going to score more raw fantasy points, then you just take the savings because Gurley is 800 more than Hunt, than Elliott and some of those other guys. So I think for that reason, and given the fact that the savings really matter when you start trying to pay up for multiple guys, like, you know, saving up 800 in your wide receivers, for instance, is the difference between getting some like random schmo at 5,900. Like, I just can't even think of anyone who costs that much right now off the top of my head. So say like Rishard Matthews or something versus a real guy like Robert Woods. So I'm not going to be the one making that call, and I don't feel bad about it.
And both those wide receivers are in this game. Woods did come back from injury last week and came right back and led the team in targets with 7, to converted it to 6 for 45-1. When we added a few more inputs this week, it looks like he's coming into pretty much all of our cash games at this point, which do you feel comfortable with that? Because it looks like right now at 6,600 on FanDuel, and I can't remember the price off the top of my head on DraftKings as I looked. I take that back. He's not in our DraftKings lineups, but 6,600 on FanDuel. We talked about Woods briefly. Are you feeling comfortable with him in 100% of cash lineups as we record this podcast Friday morning?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, so last week, you know, I pointed out that his target share had gone down after coming back from injury. You rightfully pointed out that probably most of that was just the game script, the fact that they were absolutely boat racing Seattle. And there was no point to probably run him back out there after taking a month off. So he didn't really play the fourth quarter. I think he was on pace for similar targets that he was going to have against, or that he did have against Minnesota and Houston. He's one of the main things working about this offense right now, really frees up Gurley, both in the running and the passing game. So I think he's just a phenomenal play at 6,600. I mean, it's almost embarrassing to compare him to some of these other guys like Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, you know, whoever among the other 7,000-ish wide receivers outside of a couple guys. So, yeah, I think Woods is an excellent target.
If you think they're playing from behind, Tennessee saw 18 combined targets between Delanie Walker and Rishard Matthews this week. Both had very good games, but Matthews especially, 6 for 95 and a touchdown. Do you think he's getting, do you see him drawing himself back into like that possession, maybe downfield guy for Mariota? Well, you know, we've been at times high on Matthews and then it's just struggled with the consistency. Anything you like here on this? Is there anything else to talk? Can you talk yourself into that for GPPs on the Tennessee side?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think he is among those guys that actually does have the upside to pay off in a big tournament. The issue kind of with him is going to be the target share. I mean, he's peaking out at 8 targets this season, minus those first 3 games when it looked like it would be a little bit something more. So, yeah, I think overall it's just not a great spot for me, but totally playable.
Chargers go in and play the Jets. They are another road favorite here. There's a lot of road favorites going into this week as we get into the later part of the season, with especially some bad teams playing at home. Keenan Allen is a guy we've gone back and forth about. We have him ranked right now as the highest overall for the main slate, highest overall projected wide receiver at 8,300. Now, it's a little weird because we've talked a lot about some expensive running backs and at some point, and expensive quarterbacks as well. And at some point, you just simply can't pay for everybody. Would Allen be a guy we'd want to prioritize in cash here this week, maybe at the sake of paying down a little bit at running back, or really punting for the rest, or possibly, you know, punting a tight end and the rest of the wide receiver core? Where do you stand with Allen and the rest of the Chargers attack?
I think if I was going to pay up at wide receiver, Allen would be a guy I would consider, but I just don't think, I think the safety I get in the 6,000s at running back, or a wide receiver rather, is much better than the savings I get at running back at the same price point. Like, I don't at this point see a lot of great puntish sort of plays in that range, you know, or mid-range guys that are kind of inappropriately priced, perhaps outside of Kenyon Drake. But as we pointed out, he's got his own concerns as well. It's just hard to imagine, you know, being able to spend in the 8,000s at quarterback, spending at the 8,000s at running back, perhaps even going there in tight end and Rob Gronkowski, and being able to afford Allen. So I think he's on the chopping block, just not based on any fault of his own. I mean, there are, I guess, a couple concerns with some of the injury things and the reduced target share the last couple weeks. But I think it's more just a function of, you know, how many $8,000 players can you play and at what positions?
Melvin Gordon, another guy, saw 19 carries, 8 targets last week. Just another, at times, has been in that elite range as a running back on the road. Jets defense has been decent this year. You know, they rank much better against the rush than they do against the pass. 13th overall DVOA against the run. This Gordon start creeping up into that group of running backs that we talked about earlier, like that Elliott Hunt Gurley group, or does he sit maybe a tier below with the matchup?
Yeah, probably a tier below just based on the matchup. But yeah, the opportunity certainly been there. You know, he actually, if you just look strictly along opportunity lines, it's been since October that he hasn't had 20 touches in a game. So he's certainly getting the opportunity. The real question is what he does with it. And this has been an issue with Gordon and the Chargers running game basically since he became the lead back. You love the running attempts that you see in the left-hand column on FanDuel, but then you look at the actual rushing yards. So in spite of not having fewer than 20 touches in a single game since October, he also has not topped 80 rushing yards in any of those games. So that is really, really bad. I mean, he does trickle in and chip in the receiving game. He had the big receiving week last week against Kansas City. I think that's more smoke and mirrors than anything else. The 8 targets was double anything else that he's had since October as well. He did have an 8 target game against Jacksonville and kind of was more involved in the passing game earlier in the season. But I have no real reason to believe that that's the general plan going forward. So I think you're probably paying just a little too much. Again, he's more expensive than Ezekiel Elliott. And that's really the benchmark this week for are you cash game viable running back or not.
Bryce Petty came in and started at quarterback last week for the Jets. Was pretty bad. 19 for 39, 179 yards. Did throw a touchdown. He targeted Robbie Anderson a lot, though. Anderson was the clear, again, target leader for this team. He had 12 targets, I think. Now, he didn't convert any of them and you could probably figure that out just when figuring out from Bryce Petty's line how many of those passes he was going to convert. But Anderson's a guy that we've seen put up numbers this season. He has another week now of practice with Petty. Do we want to live with this kind of target share? He's the reason I bring him up is because he's a pretty interesting DraftKings play right now. He's only 5,000 on DraftKings, which is sometimes right in that middle tier of guys. It's sometimes like that 5,000 salary just can really help a lot in trying to make a lineup. And it doesn't feel great at times because you'd love Robbie Anderson at like 4,000, let's say, right? But at the 5,000 rate, I think that we probably could see something of a game from him. Could you talk yourself into him at that price on DraftKings?
Sure. I mean, we know the upside's there, right? We know that he had that long stretch this season where he was scoring a touchdown every single game. So we know the Jets like to use him down close. We know that the target share is there even with the new quarterback. Now, the big question is how comfortable will Petty be with another week of snaps under the center with the first team? And I think that probably does make a difference. You know, it should be an improvement in matchup this week, not going at New Orleans against Lattimore. So I think that he's a guy definitely we can consider on DraftKings. He's definitely not going to be in the lineups on FanDuel.
Buffalo goes in the last 1 o'clock game. Buffalo goes in and takes on New England. New England, a huge favorite here, -11.5. They are going to be without Rex Burkhead. Do we think it matters? It looks like they're going to activate Mike Gillisley. They're probably just prepping for the playoffs at this point. Do we want to take a shot at anything with a New England running game as big favorites here now that we have Burkhead out of the mix? Or do you think we just see, you know, 7 carries from Gillisley, 12 carries from Lewis, and that's kind of the way the game flow goes? Or do you think we can maybe just kind of pick a spot with a New England running back and hope to get lucky?
Yeah, I think that's a GPP bet that you can make if you would like. I think Lewis is too expensive at 6,700 to speculate on with Gillisley coming off the bench and getting in there and getting some carries. I think the Patriots have had every opportunity to give Deion Lewis the classical running back one role in the past and never taken it. So I don't know why they would now as they're gearing up for the playoffs, especially because he does play a very important role in the team, even if it is rather niche compared to some RB1s elsewhere. So I think for that reason, I'm not going to touch that running game. We talked about it on the cash game podcast, but I am interested in Gronk for cash games if you can afford it, and everyone else on this team. And frankly, in this game, it's just a tournament play only.
Yep, I agree. Moving into the 4 o'clock games, Jacksonville goes in and takes on San Francisco. Jags, another road favorite here at -4 against the 49ers. Looks like Leonard Fournette is going to be a full play this week. Do we trust him on the road against San Francisco as a possible cash game play? Do you think that, like, I mean, he's been kind of tweaked up a little bit here with some of these injuries, which always makes me a little concerned about how Jacksonville, who looks like they're going to get into the playoffs, how Jacksonville wants to use him down the home stretch in the regular season. Are you worried with the injury that we might see slightly less opportunity for Fournette?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I think I kind of see Fournette as Melvin Gordon, but who's actually good on a yards per touch basis. So like, if you look at his opportunity when he does play, outside of that Arizona game, I mean, he's pretty much a lock for 20 and sometimes touching up near 30 touches per game. And I think that if he's playing and, you know, they're giving him the all go, he's practicing in full, then I think he's going to just touch the ball 20 to 26 times a game. And that's just worth it on an $8,100 price tag against a not so good San Francisco defense. So, yeah, I think he's just a flat out good play. And I think he's another guy that edges out some of the other guys in the similar price range or in the more expensive price range. Because while I think Gurley's probably better running back than him, do I want to pay the full extra $1,000 considering that Fournette just came off 28 touches the last time he played? Like, no, I don't. So I still like Fournette, even considering some of the injury concerns.
And I take that back. Actually, Jacksonville has already qualified for the playoffs. They've won the AFC South. And I guess there's like some consideration. I don't know all the playoff implications here, but they're only a game back in the loss column from the Steelers and the Patriots. So I guess there's probably some outside shot.
Yeah, they can still get a first round bye. Not even an outside shot. They can absolutely still get a first round bye. So they will be playing this week, I would think.
Yep, interesting. Okay, so then the wide receiver core. We saw big games from guys like Jordan Mickey and Keelan Cole last week, even though we were pretty heavy on D.D. Westbrook. Marquise Lee is not going to play this week, but it looks like they're going to get Allen Hurns back. Though, if you read the notes that he's said about himself, he's kind of saying, I'm not 100%, but I'm going to try to play. With Hurns possibly coming back here, where do we want to kind of put the opportunity for the Jacksonville wide receiver core? I wanted to be pretty high on Westbrook and Cole, and then Hurns coming back sort of like kind of throws that maybe just like makes that a little bit more confusing. Do you have any strong feeling again for the Jags wide receivers?
Again, if they elect to play Hurns here, I would suspect that he is going to be highly targeted and probably pretty decent. I would be a little bit concerned. The ankle injury is never really something you want to mess with on wide receiver, even losing a single step for a speed focused guy like Hurns, you know, who's just athleticism kind of generates a lot of his catches rather than his route running ability. I would be, just a little bit concerned about that. I think if he is out, and I think that's still in play, by the way, then I think those other guys that you mentioned are, you know, still totally playable. I mean, they're very, very cheap, probably still in the big tournament only range, just because I think there's other guys like Kendall Wright. We actually glossed over him in the Chicago game, but I think he's still a much better cash game play than these guys. And then for big tournaments, though, sure, anything goes.
And then Jacksonville draws a very, very tough matchup here against the number one defense in the league. They're excellent against the pass, number one ranked DVOA there. Marquise Goodwin was a guy we had some interest in and adding some more inputs. His projection did drop a little bit over the course of the week, though I do still find him interesting if they're playing from behind, because he has turned in to the de facto wide receiver one for Jimmy Garoppolo. So still some interest. I still have interest here in Goodwin, and maybe just not as much. I'd probably just go the Robert Woods route in the same price range.
Probably right.
The Giants go in and play Arizona. Arizona is a -3.5 favorite at home. For the Giants side, we did talk at length about Sterling Shepard yesterday as a pretty nice cash game play. Doesn't look like, you know, the projections here do not look like he's going to draw that the shadow coverage, though Arizona does have a pretty good secondary. Still like Shepard here. Other guys like, you know, Roger Lewis, Tavares King, Eli Manning has thrown to some other guys here this week. Do you think there's their GPP shots for the rest of the Giants wide receiver core that have found some upside in the past?
Yeah, Roger Lewis, I think, is an interesting guy because he's had double-digit targets the last 2 weeks with Eli back, and he's been, I mean, only moderately successful with those, but especially if we think that Peterson is going to be on Shepard, I think Lewis is probably just that second target to look at. So, yeah, I think he's definitely in strong consideration here.
And then Evan Ingram had 13 targets again last week as well. And it was the game against the Eagles was a shootout. But Ingram is a guy that we have been kind of gone back and forth on. He's a little bit expensive. From an athleticism standpoint and just overall just upside for for tight ends, he does strike me as a guy that has upside here. Would we be comfortable playing him? I mean, like between him and like Greg Olsen, we have them actually projected pretty close together. Do you have a gut feeling of where you'd rather go between Ingram and Olsen here?
Yeah, I think I'd probably rather go with Olsen. I mean, that might be a little bit dubious just because we only have the 1 week on him. But given the full bill of health right now, I think that Olsen probably represents a little bit more upside. That being said, Ingram will be the next biggest beneficiary after Lewis, probably, if Shepard isn't able to go. They actually do run, they don't run similar routes necessarily, but they are used in similar situations in the game, primarily for short yardage situations where the Giants want to move the chain. So, yeah, I think Ingram's good. I think both of them are, both Ingram and Olsen, I should say, are very good cash game plays and wouldn't be devastated to see either one show up in the lineups.
Arizona doesn't look like they've been completely decimated at running back as well this season, with obviously David Johnson going down early and then Adrian Peterson and now Kerwin Williams, though they're still home favorites here against a Giants defense that's it's pretty damn bad. Anything to like here for a team that's, you know, not expected to put up a ton of points, but some for Arizona, this is a decent, not a terrible overall implied total. Can we get excited for anything on the Arizona side?
Yeah, I think the running back situation is a little bit intriguing here. Like if Kerwin Williams were to be out, we saw guys like DJ Foster see some usage in the receiving game last week. He went out there and had 9 targets. So I think if Williams were to go down and you could see Foster move in and get a few more of those touches, that could be somewhat intriguing. I don't think it's really a cash game play. I don't see why he represents that much more value than Kerwin Williams did at 5,700. And so given that Arizona's just been pretty horrendous at running the ball, I don't know that there's too much to get excited about there. I guess Larry Fitzgerald, I mean, he's probably just appropriately priced at this point at 7,500 and hasn't really produced on this price in about a month, but definitely a guy who some people will look at and say, yeah, I'll just take the safety on Fitz and kind of move on. So yeah, unfortunately though, Arizona's just another one of those teams where poor quarterback play and uncertainty and injuries has kind of taken them off the DFS landscape.
And then the final game here at 425, Seattle goes in and plays Dallas. Dallas is a -4.5 favorite. Russell Wilson is a guy we wanted to target pretty much every week this year. We talked about him briefly, or I guess we talked about him to some extent on the podcast yesterday for the cash game plays. They are big underdogs, and they are not projected to put up a ton of points. That being said, in a game where it looks like they're going to be playing catch up, could we talk ourselves into GPP stacking, or maybe even cash, but mostly GPP stacking some parts of this passing game with Wilson, Baldwin, Wilson, Graham? Where do you stand on the Seattle side? And then we can talk briefly about the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think the Seattle side is somewhat interesting. I think Wilson probably will see less ownership than he would have if this game had been last week, just because I think a lot of people are soured based on the generally terrible performance against the Rams. You know, I've compared him to a slightly rich man's Cam Newton. And really, you know, just to rehash this point a little bit, I think he's basically better than Cam in the passing game and probably less upside end floor in the running game. So probably a higher floor, generally speaking, on a result of that package, but probably, you know, a lower ceiling arguably as well. I think the Dallas matchup here is pretty interesting. I mean, Seattle certainly has no reason not to just try to pull out all the stops and really make this a thing. But it's just really hard to trust any of the other skill position players on Seattle outside of Westbrook, outside of Wilson, just because he spreads the ball around so much. I mean, he's involved in so many of the team's touchdowns, so he's kind of the classic naked quarterback, the guy you play by himself. But I just don't know how much you can get involved any of these other little pits and parts that go with him.
I really like Wilson and GPPs this week, to the point where I think you're going to get really low ownership on him based on the line and based on what he did last week. And in terms of just like overall, like if you had to bet your life on a quarterback this week having the most overall fantasy points, I mean, would you take, he'd be the only guy I would take, right? Of the group that I'm looking at, right? Like if you had to just pick one guy. And I think it's not like going out on a huge limb to say that because he scored the most fantasy points. Except that I think that the narrative around him has changed based on one
player, right?
And I think that from a GBP standpoint, like he's kind of like not the only guy I want to play, but I will have I suspect outsized ownership on him, like more weighted on him toward the field in terms of just GBP ownership. And I think that's generally correct. And I think that this line just seems wrong to me. This guy has maybe, and look, if it's 21 points and you figure he's pretty much part of all the 21 points that they are implied to get, then it kind of makes sense. But this is a team we've seen implied with 24, 25 points. And yes, I get that they're coming off one bad week, and Dallas is just like a bottom third defense. Like I just don't totally get it. I'm not wanting to do it in cash because he's too expensive. And I think Cam is just a fine play, and it's not like you're taking any kind of like hit on expected value playing Cam. But man, I love Wilson in tournaments this week. And then on the Dallas side, we talked about, obviously we talked at length about Zeke. I would think he's going to probably be the overwhelming chalk going into this week. Anything else? Like Dax looked really bad. Dez kind of looks kind of dusted. I don't know. But outside of Zeke, is there anything to like on Dallas?
Well, yeah, I'll get to those guys in a second. I just want to make one more accolade for Wilson. So he scored 23.1 fantasy points this season. That represents 11% more than any other quarterback available on this slate, right? So yeah, you're paying the most for him for sure, but it really has been backed by the performance, especially considering that number has gone down after last week's poor performance. So yeah, I just want to reiterate your point. I do think he's a great play in general and probably a really excellent big tournament play in particular, given the kind of the fact that people don't really want to spend up there. It feels like a little bit of an unsexy way to spend up, right? So yeah, I think you'll get plenty of separation there. On the Dallas side, this is a team that I think is pretty darn unexciting. Dak would be the poor person's version of those running quarterbacks that can pass as well. Really been just generally terrible on these prices and overall for a month and a half or something. I mean, maybe Elliott coming back opens up some more opportunity for him if you think he's going to use Elliott in the passing game. But outside of that, I think you're just going to see Elliott front left and center, and Prescott and the rest of these guys are just left watching and blocking.
And just one more note here, it looks like the Pittsburgh game was against Houston was flexed into the 4:30 slot and is not available on FanDuel or DraftKings for the main slate because that was done after they had originally released prices. So don't get too confused if you see that Pittsburgh game starting around the same time as the Seattle Dallas, which is a real shame too, starting around the same time as the Dallas game. And then it's just not going to be available on the main slate with guys like, I mean, specifically Le'Veon Bell that we would want to consider there. And then just a couple of quick news notes. We're not going to break down this slate, but that 4:30 to 8:30 slate, obviously, no Antonio Brown probably means more for Juju Smith-Schuster in the passing game. And then also Martavis Bryant. Houston is tough to get excited about anything going on there as big underdogs. And then Oakland, it looks like they're going to get Amari Cooper back in time to play for this game, which doesn't really matter so much for Cooper. Matters a little bit probably for Crabtree's overall performance. And then Philly, -9 favorites with Foles looking pretty decent last week. So just a quick gonna sum up that 4:30 to 8:30 slate.
Yeah, that was a great recap, Tucker. Really, really solid.
That was completely solid. Note, dfsr.com/NBA gets you that free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Still timed, obviously, with NFL and then basketball in full swing. The system or basketball system has been excellent this whole year, and especially in the short term as well. So go and check that out. That includes a premium member chat where James and I and some of our other contributors are in there talking sports pretty much all day long and then specifically leading into live. So go check that out, dfsr.com/NBA, free for 3 days, and then $34.95 a month after that. Buddy, enjoy your holiday. Enjoy a weekend full of sports with football and basketball and everything, and I will talk to you next week.
Peace.